Hey everybody, welcome to the Friday Filibuster following our 2-week 4th of July vacation, and boy was it just a wild time. Mac, I know that you have some great stories to tell. It was our annual 4th of July retreat, right, where we went out to Barbados and we hit the writer's room and we just came up with all this great content for the new year of Friday Filibuster. So any stories or memories you want to share?
Boy, I don't know. None probably that we can tell in public.
That's true. You were blacked out most of the time. And also blacked out was Eric Asperslager.
I didn't even make it on the plane.
You didn't, actually. That's true. You know, you didn't even make it. And
I spent most of the time just kind of reenacting scenes from the terminal. Which is not funny enough to interrupt your introduction of Daryl. I apologize.
Sorry. Daryl is here as well.
Where am I?
There you go. He's still bouncing back. So, yeah, crazy times. But, yeah, we're back after hiatus. So we'll dive right in. Mac, it's been a while. Do you want to update anything to update on us?
Let's see. What have I been doing? Well, it's the big talk around town is how the Lone Ranger was totally flopped at the box office. But
did you go see it?
I was one of the rare few that actually went and paid a ticket to go see it, yeah.
And the verdict?
It's not as awful as everyone's been saying it is, but it's not that great either.
Is it
kind of more middle of the road,
which is almost worse.
It's really long. 2.5 hours is a long time for a Lone Rangers movie.
That's like
Lone Rangers, Lone
series.
Ranger. It's kind of like two movies. On the one hand, you got the Lone Ranger origin story, and on the other hand, you got look how weird Johnny Depp is. And the two movies, they never really quite come together, work together like they could or should. And so it was just really frustrating.
Was it boring?
I'd say there are boring parts. A lot could have been trimmed in the editing room. There's a lot of characters that are kind of in the movie for no reason, except that I guess they liked those actors or something. But like the ending, the final 10 minutes is a big chase scene on the train. That was really great, and if the whole movie had that same kind of fun energy, it would have been really great, but it doesn't really become fun until the very end. So, I guess kind of a disappointment, yeah.
All right. Not exactly a ringing endorsement.
Is it – the ads seem to suggest that there's a lot more of the Tonto story, or that he's focused on more than I've seen in old Lone Ranger things. Is that the case?
I'd say so. Yeah, he's really given a prominent role. Like I said, it's kind of like, you know, he has his plot line and the Lone Ranger has his plot line, and then their two storylines kind of intersect at various points.
So, gotcha.
But yeah, it's like, and the Lone Ranger has the bad guy that he's after, and then Tonto is the bad guy that he's after, and then they all meet up at the end.
It sounds like two movies that each should be an hour and 15 minutes long.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was kind of wondering, boy, wouldn't it have been daring to just take the Lone Ranger out of the picture and just make Tonto the movie? That'd be a lot harder to sell, but it would have been really daring and interesting experiment to try.
All right. Well, that is unfortunate, apparently. So, well, we got Pacific Rim right around the corner, Mac. So maybe that's right. And I will inquire. You were, I know you were not interested much with visions of Battleship still ringing in your head. But as we grow closer and the marketing is amped up, thoughts about Pacific Rim?
I don't know. I'm at the point now where I'm not reading the reviews because I don't want to get spoiled for stuff.
Yeah, same here, actually. Same here.
But all the action figures are out, and I checked those out, so I kind of got a better look at what everything looks like.
Nice.
So I don't know. I guess I'm just cautiously optimistic.
All right. So we should have a Friday Filibuster review for you next week. So stay tuned for that. Cool. Eric.
Well, it's interesting talking about summer movies because I've come to the conclusion, which I guess I should have come to a long time ago. It seems like, with rare exceptions, summer movies are just largely forgettable. Like if we had recorded an episode, recorded a show instead of going to Barbados like 2 weeks ago,
yes,
I would have talked about seeing Man of Steel and Star Trek when I was in Maine. But those are both. But I've basically forgotten both of those movies. Like they were totally not great, but okay, kind of a thing, you know. And it sounds like Lone Ranger is sort of the same thing. Pacific Rim has been getting good buzz, but it's hard for me to think back on like a truly great recent summer movie that just really sticks with me. Even Iron Man 3, which I liked a lot. It's not like I'm itching to go back and rewatch it. Do you know what I mean? Am I just jaded, or is that?
I mean, there's been a couple for me personally, but I won't presume. I wouldn't presume to call you on anything. Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. It sort of seems like it's happened this way every summer. It's like summer movie season is so
exciting.
Avengers
didn't do anything for you?
Avengers was fun. I haven't gone back and rewatched it. I think there may be a little bit more substance there than I, you know, remember. But even so, it's essentially a big blockbuster. It's a big kind of overstuffed action movie that's a lot of fun, but I think there are a lot of other movies that I could probably go and revisit and get a lot more out of. And the Avengers probably comes closer than a lot of other things. I'm not trying to complain, but I mean,
I think you've turned the corner. You've become crotchety.
I guess. Well, I don't know. I've kind of been jaded about summer movies for a long time. This isn't brand new, but it just seems like even more summer movies are. Yeah, maybe I'm crotchety. Summer movies are like even more of a just a roller coaster ride. That once they're done, you just kind of walk away and go to the next thing. There's really not a whole lot of reason to mull over stuff, to kind of look for meaning and substance. It's just like, let's see how many plot twists we can throw at the audience for 2.5 hours and how much stuff we can destroy, and then we'll walk away, and that's kind of it.
Wow, all right. Daryl,
I don't know.
Can you lift us?
The argument is that the studios want to keep plots to the big blockbusters simple so they can have mass appeal.
But they don't do that anymore. I mean, like, the plots of blockbusters are no longer simple. They're so convoluted and complex that they have to, like, you know, they force characters to, like, spend, you know, 5-10 minutes dialoguing and monologuing about stuff just to explain what's happening when they should be able to, if it's really simple enough that the audience can follow it, they should be able to just show what's happening and it should make sense and everything should fit together nicely instead of being. You know, I'm tired of the mystery box, certainly.
Yeah, and they're so dang long for what you're actually getting out of them.
Yeah,
that's true. They're long.
I mean, I don't – what I've always had a hard time understanding, and this is – it's been going on for 10 years at least, is that why don't the studios see the value in having more showings of their movie rather than spending the extra money for extra footage? That's the way it always used to work for action movies and, you know, blockbuster movies. They were 90 minutes and, you know, you can fit an extra 2 showings a day. But I guess their market research tells them otherwise. Because at least since the Harry Potter movies, almost every blockbuster is running at plus 2 hours.
Yeah. It's
for nothing, for no added value, extra exposition or, you know, an extra scene of Expelliarmus or something.
Which is why Terminator 3 continues to be such an underrated gem. 90 minutes for that lean,
fair enough.
Lean, badass machine. All right, well, did you...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to see what else you wanted to add.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know. I guess we're not going to go into a big, long discussion about stories and summer blockbusters, which is totally fine. I will end on a happy note, something that I can recommend wholeheartedly in the video game realm, of all things. We're talking about story. I finally finished playing Telltale's Walking Dead game, and it is awesome. It took me a long time to get around to playing the last 2 episodes, but I kind of powered through them over the long weekend, and it goes to some really dark and interesting and original places. And because you are, you know, in control, or at least with the illusion of control in the way you play the story, it has you know, real emotional resonance. I was really, really impressed by that. So if you haven't played it, it's getting cheaper. It's always on sale. I totally recommend it. And I don't even like zombies anymore or Walking Dead. So that's how much I like it.
These are all the same world, different stories within the same world, right?
Well, no. This is it's a 5-part story. So it's each episode they released it episodically. So each episode came out like one a month for, you know, 5 months. Each one is probably ranging anywhere from 2 to 4 hours long, depending on how you play it. So, you know, you're in the kind of 15 to 20 hour game range when all is said and done. So it's a pretty meaty story. And it's more of an interactive, more like an interactive comic book than, you know, a video game in the sense that there's not a whole lot of, like, shooting segments and those kind of things. There are button prompts you have to do at the right time. A lot of it is just choosing dialogue options and how you're going to interact with the people around you and choosing how you want to play. And that can mean, you know, choosing who lives and who dies. That can mean choosing whether you're going to ally yourself with this person or that person and maybe screw yourself over later on, or whether you're going to play sympathetically or whether you're going to be, you know, a loner. They do a really great job, especially, I mean, the last episode especially just is harrowing.
But they have nothing to do with the show or the comic, correct?
They're based on the comic.
It
takes place in the same world. I don't know if they're, I've never read the comic, but I think some characters from the comic book pop in now and then, kind of as a nod to it. It's not following the story of the comic, it's an original story, but it's in that world. So I'm looking forward to the second season later this year. So.
I've heard excellent things as well.
It's really good. Next time it's on sale on your platform of choice for like $10, I say totally pick it up. It's awesome. Right.
Excellent. All right, Darryl, what do you got?
Nothing that's gonna up the enthusiasm level. Because I am more on Eric's plane with summer blockbusters. I've been out forever on these things. I'm a little bit more optimistic about Pacific Rim than I was, say, a few weeks ago, only because I've read really good notices about it, but I still don't quite get the hype about Monsters versus Robots, since that's basically been done in Japan since Ultraman at the very latest. So I'm not sure how much it's going to offer, except a bunch of fights between monsters versus robots, and I guess I can watch Robotech for that, or Voltron, preferably Voltron, I suppose. For the first time, and I'm late in the game for this, especially as a horror fan, but I finally just this week watched Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, you beat mine. Great. That's what I was going to say.
Awesome.
We both watched the old things at the same time. That's all I had. All right, go ahead.
That's old news even for me.
I know. It's a coincidence. I decided to fire up Amazon Prime one night, and that's what I watched, and you watched it too. But I still my thunder. Go.
I had heard enough good things about it to want to see it. I was skeptical, and I generally hate it.
Whoa.
Wow. Wow.
Fascinating.
It reminds me of Scream. One of my least favorite horror movies of the 90s. Mm. Of course, the sequels got no better. As somebody who has spent unfortunate countless hours watching horror movies, it seems fairly moot to tell me that horror movies are stupid.
I don't think that's what it does at all.
Well, I would disagree with that, but continue.
Yeah. Good. it's a series of scenes that basically say to me, look at this. It's a horror movie. And look at how silly horror movies are. It may be, in a certain sense, a tribute, insofar as it does get some of the horror tropes right, but it seems to be purposefully badly written to say, look at me, I'm in a horror movie. And that's what I hated about Scream, and that's kind of what I hate about Cabin in the Woods.
Hmm. Wow.
You're entitled to your opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
But wow, I guess I totally saw it differently. I mean, I saw it more as a comedy more than anything, I think. I was laughing out loud in several moments. But I guess I don't know if it was anything. I didn't feel it to be like subversive or anything. I mean, yeah, I guess it was in a way, but it was its own little story, and they kind of had some fun with those tropes. I never saw it as being, derogatory towards them. So, like, kind of wielding them in a in a different way, and but telling its own story, which was laden with enough comedy and enough Whedon and Drew Goddard humor that I was laughing pretty consistently throughout, not the least of which at the merman's appearance.
Well, that's one of the things. It's like, well, the guy gets his merman, and
I mean, he knew it was coming. Obviously, it was coming, but I don't know. I had a great time with it. So interesting.
I found it to be really creative, and I don't think it was derogatory at all. I kind of loved the way it all unfolded, and I hadn't had it spoiled for me beforehand. And even once you get to the twist, all it does is kind of change the stakes. We're all entitled to our own opinions. It was probably
there are further twists near the end of the film where it kind of stops being about horror movies and it introduces stuff out of Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm.
Did that register at all for you, Daryl? Or
it registers, but it's sort of this weird issue where about two thirds of the way through the movie. And I guess maybe I just found this part awkward, that it changes from being Cabin in the Woods to Bloody Teens in an Office Building. And then it goes to – and it's a brief scene, I guess, but it's what I hated about True Blood, where every kind of monster was represented.
Oh, really? I love that. That was my favorite part.
I thought it was great.
And I hate okay. that scene.
That's all right.
I hate that scene. I guess I was expecting, like, Pinhead to walk out of one of those elevators.
But he did.
He did.
A version of him did. Yeah.
I guess I missed that.
You're like Kiss to something. Yeah. I should learn them up. So
we should say spoilers, but yeah. At this point, it's been on Netflix for a while.
I'm the only one who shouldn't be. I'm the one who shouldn't be spoiled on this, and it's been 18 months since this came out.
I had a great time with it. I didn't like. I can't stand. Like, there are a few movies I can stand that are like way too clever for its own good, and they know they're clever. Like, I think Ocean's 12 was that what it was where. That just irritated me in such a big way, where they went so meta that Julia Roberts became the character Julia. It was terrible. Yeah. Like, so, and it was just, and that was like not even clever by half, but clever by whatever, you know, way more than that. And it was just cloying and, you know, irritating. I thought this was. I never thought it was like, look how clever we are. I felt like it was just a fun, entertaining. Different story that had fun with some tropes that wasn't really like wasn't spoofing them or parodying. I don't know.
Well, I guess I just
I don't want to get too into the weeds because I'm sure smarter than us had this conversation. but it surprised me and I laughed pretty consistently and maybe that was just responding to that Whedon type of humor, which I tend to
like his type of humor, but I guess I'm a little sensitive to horror, which I probably shouldn't be after all this time. But seriously.
You're the only person I know who watches so many horror movies. They don't get desensitized; they get more sensitive.
I defend them. what college students play Truth or Dare?
I think that was the.
Well, there are okay. We can. We're not going to get into actual reasons for things that happen in the movie. I think that there are some pretty clearly defined boundaries and kind of scope of things that. Explain why characters act the way they act within the constructs of the movie, but again, I can certainly see when it came out, it was pretty divisive. I mean, for as you know, critically acclaimed as it generally was, I definitely saw people who hated it, and you know, I being on the other side of that, I don't you know quite get it, but I you know, you're not alone, and I can certainly see if you saw it as you know some sort of attack on the genre or some kind of like you know. Derogatory thing, then you know you take it personally. But
well,
I thought the opposite way.
It's not quite.
That's Eric's diplomatic way of saying stop being a baby.
I just want somebody to make a romantic comedy about romantic comedies that use all the romantic comedy tropes.
It's called Date Movie. Watch it and see how awesome.
Yeah, but that's just a stupid spoof. I want somebody like a respected writer or director to make a thing that's a romantic comedy. That makes fun of romantic comedies and expect fans of romantic comedies to like it. And I feel like that's the way Scream worked. I feel like that's the way Cabin in the Woods worked.
I will give a shout out to Wet Hot American Summer in that regard.
Yeah,
They have a very good plot line.
I'm okay with Wet Hot American
Summer. They have a very good plot line.
It also has a really good cast.
It does. Yeah. Let me segue from this talk into
this one has Thor. You know,
this is 2009 Thor.
Fair enough.
There's a fine, very fine line when it comes to any kind of like homage or parody type thing, and very few people do it well. I mean, when you talk about that, I think of Edgar Wright as being someone who can walk that line, you know, and make something, you know, about the tropes of a genre while also making a great entry in that genre.
See, I think that works for me. I think Cabin in the Woods was like a Hot Fuzz thing for me. I think that's a good
game. I think so. Yeah,
at least for me. So, but let me, I will take us from that and just use that as a segue to, since we won't talk about Cabin in the Woods for me, I will say that I did watch a little movie called Olympus Has Fallen in the Cheap Seats Theater for $3.75. Just heard it was a big R-rated action movie, and since they don't make those anymore, I decided to check it out. And incredibly dumb, you know, like awesomely dumb, like awesomely dumb. And there should be something on the site soon documenting my experience with Olympus Has Fallen, because it was really eye-opening. And he's talking about an opportunity to play with some of those tropes, but they just completely embrace. I mean, they just embraced a lot of the cliches, but it was big and loud. I did enjoy my time with it, but I'm not blind to say it wasn't stupid. Case in point, the finale, where, spoiler, the president and our hero walks out of the burning carcass of the White House, and there are literally corpses strewn everywhere. And the last line is a joke. The Gerard Butler says, "Sorry about your house, sir," and the president says, "Don't worry, it's insured," and they laugh about it. While there are dead people at their feet. So it's like,
it sounds like a McBain movie.
It is, and like so. There's a sequence where the president is doing his standard issue address to the nation. "We will come back stronger than ever before." I was just dying for the screenwriter just to put in, you know, you know, as he talks about how they're going to rebuild from the ashes, they should add a piece of dialogue where he says, "And now is as good a time to any to pass my deficit reduction package." You know, that would have been great to hear. Give me a little, subvert it just a little bit. Like that. Nope, it was pretty much down the wire cliche. But it was big. It was R-rated. The bad guys weren't like militia men from North Dakota or whatever. They were North Korean terrorists. And you knew they're the bad guys right away, because the undercover bad guy that was with the South Korean delegation, he was a bad guy and Die Another Day, so you knew he wasn't just in the background. So I don't know, just a lot of stupid stuff, but actually worth my $3.75. So, and that's probably really at the top of what I would put it at, $3.75. So. Man, that should be our rating system. How much would you pay to watch?
Which is it worth?
So, all right, let's move on quickly talking about stuff we have for the site. I know there's probably quite a backlog, but you're limited to one thing to talk about on the site. So, Mac, what do you got coming out?
Yep, the review is already on the site. I was very fortunate to get the first season of The Legend of Korra, which, as you might recall, is my pick for the best TV series of last year. Really enjoyed it. Looks great on Blu-ray. This is the follow-up to Avatar: The Last Airbender, but it takes place, I think, 80 years later. And so there's our new hero is Korra, who travels to this new modernized city. There's been an industrial revolution, so now we've got, like, instead of swords, we've got guns. Instead of, you know, mounted steeds, we have cars. So it's a kind of a whole new setting. But there's just tons of action, really great, likable characters, and can't say enough good things about it.
All right. Very good. Eric?
One thing, huh? Okay, well, the one thing that I think I like the most that reviews to Subban Away is a Chilean film called No, which is based on a true story. It's basically the story of the 1988 referendum in Chile that ousted the dictator Pinochet, and the people who led this the campaign to have people vote no, and the powers that be thought that it was in the bag, and they basically subverted it. And the thing that's really interesting about the movie, besides all the, you know, performances and the story, which is all very well done, is that they shot it on videotape that was current at the time. So it looks kind of terrible, but it's kind of perfect for the story. So it's this, you know, old, like, 3/4-inch Sony VHS not VHS, but U-Matic tape that they used. It really fits the story well. If you get a chance to check it out, do so.
So is this a documentary or a...
No, it's a fictionalized story. In fact, the main character...
Like a biopic.
Sort of, except that, I mean, there's a main character who's played by Gael Garcia Bernal, who didn't exist in real life. He's kind of a fabrication to, a lot of stuff sort of circles around him, and a lot of the major issues feed through the character. It looks like it could have been. I mean, they take actual footage and commercials from the campaign and some news footage and just weave it right in to what they shot, and because it's all, shot on the same stuff, it just fits seamlessly. So it's really, really very clever.
Nice. Daryl. I keep going Derek.
Daryl, whichever. You sound like my dad. That's my brother's name, Eric. So, yeah, you sound exactly like my dad. So I'll respond. But I really don't, as is not that that rare, I don't really have anything that I feel like anybody cares about. I've been reviewing a lot of things that come out on Scorpion releasing obscure mid-70s to mid-80s horror movies. I did one movie called The Unseen in the last couple of weeks that stars Barbara Bach. And and Sidney Lassick, whose name might not be very good, but who's been in a ton of things. And it's kind of fun, and it's really terrible, but I like it. But beyond that, bunch of stuff nobody really cares about.
All right. At least
we're let's move on.
Appreciate it. I'll just give a shout-out to there are several movies that could never, ever be made, ever, that were made at one point that would never be able to make. Greenlit at all. Like, I think Blazing Saddles is one. Slapshot is another one. And I reviewed one right at the top of the list, the Kentucky Fried Movie.
Movie's a crazy. Is a crazy flick.
It is crazy. It'd never get made today. It's obviously the Zucker guys when they first cracked into Hollywood. This is their first go round. It's a sketch anthology, so it's hit and miss. And some of it's just way out there, like the infomercial about preserving your dead relatives, starring a dead child. There's a dead kid in this, so that's on one
always
end.
Should be a dead kid in the
and it really does go for it, but there's a lot of really racial humor. But the centerpiece is the Fistful of Yen knockoff on Kung Fu Films.
Oh, I think I remember that.
Yeah, it's about 20 minutes long, and it's very funny, very airplane top secret esque. Some gags that are legitimately hilarious. So I probably on balance laughed more than not in Kentucky Fried Movie, but just giving it the shout out that would never see the light of day ever.
That's,
in
what
2013.
About
1977, I think.
77?
Uh-huh. 77, 74, yeah, 77, I think.
Yeah, and that's the same time. And another thing that you didn't mention was All in the Family.
True, there you go. Okay.
Which would never get, would never see today.
That's right.
Just never. As interesting and good as that show might be, doesn't really matter. Having that character as your main character in a show, Archie Bunker, is not going to happen.
Like, the Kentucky Fried Movie is fun in that it just really exposes the fraudulence of crap like Date Movie or gross-out comedies. They said, look how gross we are, But they would never touch some of the humor these guys are doing with a 10-foot pole. They would never, ever do it. So,
no.
So I don't. But at the very least, A Fistful of Yen is incredible.
It has a cult following. Is the Blu-ray worth anything?
It's not a reference disc, that's for sure. So, it's the AV isn't like stuff. It's like the original mono, and the video quality is up and down. There is like a nice 40-minute retro interview with the Zuckers, and I don't think that was on anything else. That might be a new feature. I didn't find it on any other release. So that was pretty cool. So that'd be worth checking out. But,
That's something.
Yeah. So that, I think that might, and there's the commentary on that is excellent. That's the same recycled commentary. But it's really funny. These guys, it's really
funny. Yeah, cause that was a video favorite since I've been interested in video. So, you know, I'm interested to hear about
it. And it is absolutely a hard art comedy.
Absolutely.
Borderline NC-17. No joke. Like, yeah, they really go for a lot of things. So, all right. Moving onward. Mac, we've missed. What are we looking at next?
Sure. Let's take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. You at home can follow along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com. Going to hit the tab for upcoming DVD releases. From there, we're just going to scroll down and hit the link for the cover art gallery for July 16th. Just talk about whatever we see on the list here.
So I was lucky enough to score 42, so that'll be one of the first movies I've gotten in a long time that my wife is looking forward to watching with me. So.
I hate biopics, and I don't want to see it, even though I hear it's good.
I am interested in seeing it just because the subject matter and like the sports angle for sure. But typically, I'm not a huge biopic guy myself.
But apparently, the good.
But
thing
I could
about
use
it...
a cleanse. I could use a palate cleanse from American Idiots or
sure.
One Man War, which I just watched, so I'm open.
The thing that sounds interesting to me about it that might make it worth watching for me is that they have they've CG'd the old ballparks.
Okay.
And so you actually have, you know, and baseball fans who probably all have already seen this movie, so it's probably moot, but seeing all the old ballparks. And being able to easily do that, I think, makes it a little different because hardcore baseball fans are into that kind of thing. So, you know, I think there's some appeal there. But as a biopic, I mean, I can read a bunch of junk about Jackie Robinson, and I don't really need to see it acted out.
Well, if you go with that attitude.
Well, I got a terrible attitude about
that's
it.
That's true. We've already established that.
Has anyone dragging my bad attitude down with you.
That's true. Yes.
Giving my bad attitude a bad name.
Anyone ever seen an episode of this Hell on Wheels? It's in its second season. It looked cool. I heard the critics didn't really love it, but I guess people are watching it. Anyone seen anything about this?
I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, okay. It's like it's set in kind of, you know, obviously Western times with Western times. It's nice. With well, like railroad construction, and I don't know. Looked interesting, but I didn't hear much about it.
All right, I'm gonna hijack this segment for very quickly because I just found out that this past week, Dave, this is for you.
Yeah,
Hunk Vacation came out on Blu-ray this
You're
past
kidding.
Week.
You're kidding?
I am not kidding you.
What? Where'd you find that?
On Blu-ray.com.
Came out like America, like America. Right.
Yep.
In the world.
On Blu-ray and DVD together.
I will say that cover art just does not hold a candle to the VHS cover art.
Oh, they gave the video a 4.0 out of 5. So, anyway,
holy
sorry.
Crap. Like,
sidetracking, but my
that
goodness.
Is huge news. That is huge news.
Hunk Vacation. Now, like, it gets us one step closer to Voyage of the Rock Aliens.
Do I need to buy this? No.
Boy, I don't know. They should maybe we should get it for a review. Maybe
the studio is Vinegar Syndrome. I don't recall the last time we've gotten a Vinegar Syndrome release to review. But
I had Vinegar Syndrome once. I had to take antibiotics for about 2 weeks.
They really messed up by not using the VHS cover art. I think that alone would have sold some more.
Yeah.
I cannot believe it. That is.
I me neither. I saw that on the list and I thought it had to be a mistake.
That is unbelievable.
Okay, sorry, sidetracked. But anyway.
Allow me to hijack it real quick as far as the person. Something I did. I just want to give a quick shout out to the Life's Too Short season finale that aired on HBO this Sunday. It was a Ricky Gervais, Stephen Merchant one with Warwick Davis, that series, which I was disappointed by. But the finale totally turned things around. It was fascinating. They just took this character of Warwick Davis, turned him around completely, so he was sympathetic instead of this jerk. And it was a really great little finale with a Willow 2 plot line. So Val Kilmer comes in as this complete this flake to pitch Warwick Davis on Willow 2. And he's just this complete flake, and he ends up not extorting, but just embezzling the money for the startup. There's some great lines with Val Kilmer and I don't know. Great bit where he always dresses up as Batman, guessing, having people guess who he is, and they guess every actor who played Batman except for Val Kilmer. So just a shout out to that episode. Like, it's rare that it was just so odd seeing a complete 180 on the show, and I think maybe they listened to some feedback, but it was legit. So that's all.
Are they doing a second season of that show?
No, that was a special. That was their finale special. Okay. So
it didn't. Yeah, it didn't seem like it had the legs.
No. Yeah. No. Oh, that is a cheap shot. Didn't have the legs. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Fair enough.
All right.
He might listen to this show.
He did.
Know. David did interview him. So
that's right. So Warwick, if you are listening, nice. Good job on the finale. All right. Anyway, back to what we're doing here. Sorry.
Yeah, there's not a lot on here, as you can tell.
I can't believe Punk Vacation's on Blu-ray.
I know. Yeah,
I can't concentrate for the rest of this.
I know.
You got Black Sabbath, which is a movie I'm in love with and have been for a long time.
And
all Italian horror.
White Frog. Black Sabbath, White Frog. That'd be a great double feature, I
think. It would be. It would be a great callback movie.
There's Solomon
Kane.
Got
the remake of Evil Dead.
That's right.
Such a disappointing thing.
I heard it's ultra violent. Is that correct? Or not? Hyped.
It's pretty violent. But it just doesn't really get the all the previews. I mean, when Sam Raimi was talking about it and Bruce Campbell was talking about it, you know, and granted it's hype, but they were talking about it really being a throwback to the original Evil Dead series, and it's like they got the violence from the original Evil Dead but forgot about the comedy of Evil Dead 2 and just made a really typical horror movie out of the whole thing. Mm. It's disappointing.
Now, is this the first time we've seen Solomon Kane legit Blu-ray stateside?
Oh, good question.
And this has been clamored for forever, so I don't know if it's been released before.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Did any of you see Orphan Black, since that's out here?
I haven't, but I'm intrigued by it. About cloning, correct?
Yeah, the trailers look awful. But I've heard a number of really, really positive, from friends of mine, really positive reviews of it. And I was just sort of surprised because this was the only season of Doctor Who that I've actually watched on BBC America. And I was shocked as to all of the American shows on BBC America because it's BBC. So I'm ignorant, but it was shocking to me. And this is the one that came on after, and it looked really silly. But almost universally from the people that I know who've seen it have said it was quite good. So I had requested it for review, didn't get it, but I will look for it.
Well, maybe if you turned your attitude around, you get more things to review.
Probably still just get cheap horror.
All right, good.
Which is fine. I'm always fine with that.
All right, kind of lean week, so let's curtail this now. And so, inadvertently excluded sounding release. Do we have enough to work with? I don't know. Eric, you got anything?
I think we do.
There's one.
All right.
See here. I'm going to go with Wild Deep. And
pretty
that
good.
Is it. That's
yeah, I think that's an easy one.
Yeah, Mac, you got anything?
I don't know. How about Endeavor?
Not too bad, Daryl.
Let's see. I got a couple I can use here.
Oh.
Mine isn't.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, I'm the seedy. I'm the seedy member.
You are.
Of the bunch.
It's the Rorschach test.
We'll go with the less seedy of the two with Heavy Traffic.
That's what I was going with. Man,
now I want to know what the other one was. But
yeah, why don't you say say the other one and we'll call it mine. Go.
All right. Young Justice Invasion.
All right. Okay, let's wrap this up with our ambush topics. You know this works. Daryl, why don't we keep the train rolling with you? Why don't you kick us off?
All right, I'm going to go with creative uses of lawn equipment.
Don't say dead alive. Don't say dead alive.
You have to take that one.
There's always dead alive.
Well, does I guess – okay, I'm lawn equipment. I guess – okay. Well – if I'm not say Dead Alive, I guess I'll have to say probably one of my favorite / least favorite big budget, ridiculously terrible movies was The Happening. And there was a scene where the guy lies down in front of the riding lawnmower. Remember that? Do you recall that? Who saw The Happening? Anyone see The Happening?
Still haven't seen it.
No?
I feel like I have, but
Daryl, have you seen The Happening?
Yes.
You have. Do you
yes,
recall
I
the
know
scene
what you're talking about. Yes.
So, and that just is noteworthy because these sequences were supposed to be played for psychological horror, but by that time, the movie was proven to be so dumb.
Yep.
That it became comical to watch this guy lie down in front of a riding lawnmower. That's how far down the rabbit hole that movie went. So.
I'm gonna go with keeping the riding lawnmower track. Whichever season of Mad Men it was, where they had the lawnmower in the office during the Christmas party.
Yes.
Oh yeah, a good scene. I guess it's a really good scene. Guy got his face chopped or his foot chopped off.
Yep.
Oh, well. I was trying to avoid saying that out loud. Yes.
I don't care about spoilers. We can establish this. It's been like 3 years, so. He had such potential, but now he has no foot, so he has no job.
Let's see, for mine, I'm trying to remember the exact circumstances of this. Maybe Eric can help me out here. But there's a very funny episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force where the main characters were, I think they were trying to sell their house or lower their property value, some kind of scheme like that, and they had use some sort of supernatural force to make blood come out of the sprinklers in their front lawn.
Nice.
And this was going to, like, get all their neighbors to move and stuff. But then the rock star Danzig, playing himself, saw the
Danzig
house. And,
himself, huh?
Yeah, and he decided that was awesome and that he was going to move in, so he bought the house.
That's actually really great. That's really funny.
I got a quick bonus one that obviously is not taking yours, but I just have this memory of a video we watched in health class about, like, not getting high or drinking, and it was about a kid who got high and ran his foot over with a lawnmower. And I could see his white tennis shoe covered in blood, even though the tennis shoe was perfectly intact.
I don't know how
that always bothered me.
I remember sequences like that, but I don't know how you put your foot forward far enough to.
I don't know, yeah. I was just more upset about the quality of the visual effects than.
But yeah, and being and being from Oregon, I used to get train safety videos that would show me footage of a person having their head chopped off in between train car doors. Not having things pinched off under wheels, but on train car doors. So I just kind of sort of wonder how the people who make these things get their ideas about how people die.
That was enough of a danger they had to make a movie about it?
There's a lot of hobo infestation problem in Oregon.
There's a lot of trains, and people like to hop them. but I learned because I didn't want my head lopped off between a couple of, like,
it's a different kind of hophead.
Exactly. Very different from the one.
All right. Go ahead. Wait, is that yours?
I guess it's me. I thought that the low-hanging fruit was Fargo and the
Chipper Short. Good one.
But I'm actually going with the a scene in Sinister, the Ethan Hawke horror movie from a couple of years ago, from last year, I guess. Where he gets a bunch of movies and he has a bunch of, like, 8mm movies and sees these family slaughters, and one of them has somebody mowing the lawn, and it's the really good jump scare in the movie where just off the top of frame, the lawnmower goes over a dad's face.
Mm, interesting.
So
good times.
Yes. I'm always good for a good time.
You are. It's good. All right, hopefully we have a romantic comedy amber topic coming up, so we'll see.
Yeah, I'm gonna have nightmares just from talking to Daryl.
That's right. Get back, what do you got?
All right, mine is where we're standing on the dark side with our favorite villain's henchmen.
No, good one. I don't know if we've done this before. That's an excellent one. I'm going to shout out to Necros from The Living Daylights, the James Bond movie. Members only jacket, tall guy from an unknown European country, slick back, blonde hair, and had a great death scene. And a great name, Necros. And he kills a guy by rigging an automatic glass door that cleaves someone in two.
That's like the train the train safety movies I watched.
That's, right.
That's pretty much it.
I had watched the train safety.
So maybe Necros was in those. Yeah. So I think Necros is a total package and one of the great underrated Bond henchmen. So,
I guess you could argue whether this is the henchman or the villain in the movie, but I'm going to say the Mystery Science Theater. I'm going to stay on it, but I'm going to go the Mystery Science Theater route and mention Torgo from Hands of Fate. He's definitely a henchman because he's a henchman. The Master, even though the Master doesn't show up much later, but classic. And with the HD restoration in progress, it'll that too will be on Blu-ray at some point, and it'll only be Borage of the Rackalians that doesn't exist on Blu-ray. Every other movie, now since Punk Vacation has made it to Blu-ray, I assume every other movie has as well. So only Borage of the Rackalians remains.
So I don't know if this really counts as a henchman either, but I'm going to go back to one of my all-time favorite horror movies in Hellraiser. Technically Hellraiser 2, where there's Pinhead and then there's the other Cenobites, right? Mm-hmm. So the female Cenobite...
Why do I feel like we've talked about the Cenobites for like 5 weeks in a row? Have we talked about them very frequently?
We talked about them a lot in Barbados.
That's we did. That's continue, Daryl. Sorry. Continue.
Because we put together the cube that one night.
And then that was crazy.
And then nothing happened.
That was crazy.
I'm still pulling hooks out of my teeth.
I have yet to find my pants anywhere.
They're in Leviathan.
Continue. Sorry.
The female Cenobite, who has no name, delivers one of my favorite lines in the entire Hellraiser series. Which is, it's not hands that call us, but desire. And she delivers it so well, and I will always feel good about that.
All right. Female Cenobite. Mm-hmm. Really, really affecting Daryl in a special place. Let's give it here.
Always has.
Oh. Is that why that's your Match.com slogan?
Exactly. That's exactly why.
Okay,
man,
I wonder.
It's not an original line.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, is that the Mac now? Are we all gone?
Yeah, and I guess for me, I went back to the world of comic books, as I so often do, and there's a Batman villain who you might remember from some of the games named Killer Moth. So just a guy in a moth outfit, he can fly, and that's his thing.
You're thinking of the Tick, I think, right?
Yeah, like an evil version of Arthur from the Tick.
Okay.
And he has his two henchmen, who are just these big burly guys who do his fighting for him. And their names, are you ready for this? Their names are Larva and Pupa.
Good. It's good.
And they're his evil henchmen.
They instill fear. That would instill fear.
I wonder how much they get paid to be called Larva and Pupa.
Are you sure you're not thinking of the Venture Brothers? Because I think that's in the Venture Brothers.
Did Venture Brothers use that?
No, it was pretty close. So they had the Monarch, and then they're the two short guys, I can't remember their names now, but they're essentially...
They're numbers, I think, weren't they? Henchman 4 and Henchman 6 or something.
No, the ones who are...
Oh, yeah, that's
Dr. Girlfriend's...
That's right, Dr. Girlfriend. Yeah, that's true.
I can't remember their names now.
Well, Larva and Pupa, they were in the very first appearance of Batgirl, which was, I think, 1969. That definitely predates Venture Brothers.
I'm not doubting your comic book knowledge. I'm just making references to other similar things.
All right. Well, why don't you continue, Eric? Why don't you?
All right. Well, I guess this kind of ties into Mac's last thing, oddly enough. But the summer has been defined for me by trying to kill bugs and keep them out of my house and away from my brother. I don't know what it is. It's been between bees and ants and all this stuff. I feel like I'm on, I'm warring against the onslaught of the insect horde. So. Bugs.
Okay, I'm going to... this isn't exactly bugs, but it is the same principle. And it is a cheesy 70s horror movie called Frogs.
I've seen it.
Oh, God. Poor you. with Ray Milland and... and a bunch, and Joan Van Ark, Sam Elliott's in it. So there's lots of actually like decent people in it, but it's hilarious. It's beyond hilarious for me to watch cutaway scenes of 10 or 12 frogs sitting by a sliding glass door, pawing the door, because if they get in, Lord only knows what kind of destruction could happen. And it's one of my favorite things in bad horror.
a little movie I reviewed recently called The Nest, a fun fun horror movie called Killer Roaches. So that's
Killer
great.
Roaches, yes.
Yes, Killer Roaches, just man-eating roaches. And again, they were genetically engineered for military purposes or something.
As they always are. They were just frogs.
Yeah, as they always are.
Just a lot of them.
Yeah.
Just a while back, I watched a really, really crappy, low-budget movie called Bug Busters.
Sounds terrible.
This is one of the first movie roles for Katherine Heigl. She was only like 19 when they made it.
Also one of the best.
And I wouldn't say that. What's his name? Cousin Eddie from Vacation. Quaid, right?
Oh, yeah, Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid, thank you. He's in this as well. He's basically playing the same character that John Goodman played in Arachnophobia. He's like the wacky exterminator.
And
it's a small town. It's infested with evil cockroaches. There's a giant cockroach at the end. And it's extremely low budget and not very good. I was hoping it would at least be fun and lively and I could get some laughs out of it, but no, it was just kind of dreadful. Also, it was one of the first movies to star Doug Jones, who has played monsters in all kinds of movies. So,
all right. Well, a lot of trivia packed into Nambus Topic.
That's right.
Nicely done. All right, Eric, I guess it's yours.
All right. Bunch to choose from. I'm going to go with the final sequence in Creepshow.
Oh, yeah.
All of the cockroaches in the guy's apartment, which honestly feels like my life sometimes. This morning, there was one part of our living room by the door that was like maybe, I don't know, 4x5-inch square that was just, it was salad ants. It was disgusting. Well, I'm just saying, I have a very difficult life.
I understand. And you're talking about ants, again, brings to memory of the Immortal MacGyver episode where he battles those red ants.
Ah, yes.
And you fire one of those episodes up. Thank you. That's very influential on my development. Okay. Finishing it off, fireworks.
I guess I'll go with the end of Return of the Jedi.
Good.
Okay.
Fireworks for some reason. I mean, you know. Why not? They might as well have fireworks. Right? They have everything else.
They use the X-Wings to shoot off the fireworks.
Exactly. Of course. Just like they do with our nation's capital.
So do they land and like take out the photon torpedoes or proton torpedoes or whatever they are, phaser, whatever they were, and load up like Roman candles?
Right, because the war is over, so now they find other uses that are like non-weaponized for the
X-Wings. That would be the perfect time for the Empire to strike back.
It would be.
Actually.
That's right.
Because, you know, they've decommissioned all their actual weapons.
They replace the ammunition
they're just shooting out fireworks, and that's when you come in and boom, Death Star. Maybe that'll happen in episode 7. We'll have to wait. See. Maybe that'll be J.J. Abrams' mystery box for episode 7.
Dave, you remember that movie Dynamite Warrior?
Oh, yeah. Of course. Excellent. Excellent one, Mac.
Yeah. It's about the kung fu fighting guy who uses big, like, you know, sticks of dynamite and firecrackers in his battles. And he always has them hidden either on him or around where he's standing. So he just throws the little tiny fuse onto the ground next to him, and then everything around him just blows up. And
yes.
That must have taken a lot of planning on his part.
It was. Yeah. But that's why he's a dynamite warrior and you're not. You know, that's
yes.
All right. I'm going to go with something because I'm at a loss for anything I can think of besides this. The scene in Land of the Dead where the fireworks are set off to distract the zombies so that they can go run somewhere.
That works. That fulfills the criteria of the Ambush Topper.
Absolutely.
A movie I remember nothing about, Shanghai Nights, except for the finale where they launch the bad guy into the sky with and he's strapped to a firework, I believe, and then he just explodes with fireworks. So that's all I remember. Literally nothing else from that movie. It was the follow up to Shanghai Noon, which of that I only remember the scene where Jackie Chan pees on a cloth and bends prison bars open. So So I guess I'll prefer the firework explosion versus that. So
I kind of like Shanghai Nights, actually. It's a guilty pleasure.
If I'd remembered it, I might agree with you. But I don't remember anything. So. Okay. Boy, that's it. I guess that's it on that urinary note. I guess we're done. So that's it for the Friday Filibuster. Thanks for tuning in. We're back at it. So look forward to, I guess, our tease for next week is a potential Pacific Rim review. So we'll see. And after that, I'm trying to think what else. I guess Elysium is another big summer movie. But
Elysium, yeah. I mean, I'm definitely going to see Wolverine.
Wolverine, that's right. So we're not on the clear yet. So we'll
no, see. The biggest movie is yet to come out, as we know.
That's true. Absolutely. That is still coming.
So it almost doesn't count as a summer movie. So I stick to my...
we'll see. I think there's some semantic hoops being jumped through here. So. All right.
We'll talk.
It's coming. And that is... What is that? I'll let you...
The World's End. The first reviews are starting to come out. It sounds awful.
The trilogy number three. Yeah, the third part of the... What's the name of the trilogy? Do they have a name for it?
Well... In England, it's called the Cornetto Trilogy. I think in America, it's called the Blood and Ice Cream Trilogy.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you for listening. Mac, take us away.
Hi-yo, silver, away.